Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We've got an email here from Hadari.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. Do you think there's a difference in applying to law schools this year versus next year? There were a lot of changes that happened recently with schools pulling out of the U.S. News rankings.
Okay, they didn't pull out of the U.S. News rankings. They stopped providing some data to U.S. News, but U.S. News is going to still rank those schools. Okay, go ahead.
Yep. Hadari continues, it's all very speculative, but it seems like the LSAT matters less with these changes, and I'm worried that the
That's totally speculative. These schools have, look, they have thousands of applicants, and they have to figure out a sensible way to sort thousands of applicants into hundreds of admittances. And they start with a spreadsheet. They start with an index calculation. They actually take your LSAT and your GPA, which are two numbers, and they do an index calculation, index formula, where they turn your two numbers, LSAT and GPA, into just one number,
so they
which
can
is
rank
your
you.
Index score,
yeah.
So that they can rank you. None of these changes with U.S. News are going to stop them from using LSAT and GPA in an index. They are going to use LSAT and GPA in an index because it's the only sensible thing for them to do. There's no good way of comparing people's transcripts to one another. People went to different schools, had different majors. There's no good way of comparing people's personal statements to each other. That's an essay. It takes forever to read all of, you know, thoroughly read all the personal statements. No one's going to do that first, not if they're smart. The thing that they do first is they rank the applicants based on their index. And their index is made up of just two things, LSAT and GPA.
So Hadari continues, I'm worried that in the 2024-2025 application cycle, the LSAT will carry less weight than it does this cycle. Okay. Doesn't seem likely.
Now, I will acknowledge that U.S. News did tweak their rankings formula. We've talked about that on the podcast. U.S. News tweaked their rankings formulas. LSAT is now not as important when U.S. News specifically is ranking law schools. LSAT is no longer as important. Other things are more important. But those other things are like these ephemeral things. How do law schools prejudge people on their employability?
Well, and in fact, what we talked about was that they're probably going to have to rely on the LSAT and GPA predict your employability or these other factors that now have more weight. So if you're a law school and you're like, oh, my ranking is going to depend on whether I can employ the people who leave this institution, how do I decide who's going to be good at getting a job?
Yeah.
Well, look at their GPA and their LSAT. I mean,
anyone who has any experience working with this cohort of people, we know that LSAT is not perfect, but we also know that LSAT is like kind of the best available thing.
It's better than SAT at predicting your first year grades than SAT is at predicting your first year grades in college.
Right. So SAT is still really important for undergrad admissions, even though it's become SAT optional at a lot of schools. There's no LSAT optional law school. I mean, or there is in weird circumstances, but people, the schools are still requiring an admissions test. They are going to still want to see your LSAT score. And they know that high LSAT means something. It's not the only thing, but it means something. It is a very good data point. And it's not sufficient, right? Like, look, Ben and I hire people based on LSAT scores. We hire teachers, we hire staff people based on, we want to know what your LSAT was, because LSAT is a real good proxy for being able to solve problems, being able to read carefully, being able to figure shit out. It's useful.
Yeah.
And the law schools know how useful it is. That's why they have chosen to use the LSAT over the years. No one has been requiring them to weight the LSAT as heavily as they have been weighting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see any kind of certainty that, or I don't even think it's a good speculation that the LSAT will matter less in the next cycle. We haven't seen any evidence of that.
Okay. Hadari continues, I can probably pull together a rough 160 LSAT and apply with that this cycle.
That plan sucks. Okay, next.
My last test scores were 170 untimed.
Don't care. That's not.
There is some information there, but I think Hodari sees the 170 more positively probably than is merited, right? A 170 untimed means that you had all the time in the world and you still misunderstood several questions, right?
Yes.
So really, when you're taking a test untimed, you want that to be very close to 180. it's going to be whatever it's going to be. And so there's nothing to feel bad about, but it's not as exciting of a score as I think many people think. Oh, I got a 170 untimed. Okay. Also 160 and 156. I would rather wait an extra year so I have more time to become a better applicant instead of taking the LSAT before I'm ready and trying to rush through my personal statements. Good.
Yes, that's what you should do.
But I'm nervous about taking more time to study for a test that's not going to be as meaningful next year as it is this year.
I don't buy that.
Who's to say more changes won't happen in the future to diminish the value of the LSAT even more? Is a 160 this year that much worse than a possible 170 next year in terms of scholarship value? No way. There might be some change up or down. We don't know. Actually, the LSAT could end up becoming more valuable depending on how...
It could easily become more valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, and the argument is pretty clear. If law schools are going to now be ranked more on did you pass the bar, did you get a legal job, well, employers are interested in, employers know that LSAT is a good proxy. Did you know that big law firms sometimes ask applicants for their LSAT scores? I mean, the schools might credibly, and I don't know, I'm putting myself on the spot here, but like if I were a school and I knew that I was now not going to be ranked as much on LSAT is still part of the formula though, right? Instead of 12% of the formula, it's now 5% of the formula or whatever it is. So LSAT is still important in ranking my school, but now all out of nowhere, they're going to start looking at employment outcomes.
Instead of reputation.
Instead of the reputation of other law schools.
Yeah.
It's going to be employment outcomes.
Yeah.
And if I'm sitting there as a school going, how do I make sure that this class gets jobs? Well, let's maybe overweight the LSAT. Because people who can score high on the LSAT can get shit done. And that's the one thing that I have that's a totally equal thing comparing all applicants to one another. I mean, everybody took the LSAT. Everybody has a score on the same 120 to 180 scale.
It's even easier to compare than GPA. But again, GPA is going to come in there, right? So GPA both and LSAT are going to be important indicators because you're going to say, oh, can you maintain a good academic career while juggling many classes? That's a good indicator of your likely ability to do the work that's necessary to get a job. So yeah, both of these things are going to matter. How much they're going to change in relationship to each other, we don't know. How much they're going to change in relationship to other things, we don't know. But it's very possible that they together become more important than they were before.
Yeah. And the LSAT is important in law school admissions for two reasons. One is because of the whole rankings thing. But the whole other side of it is law school deans want to know whether you're going to be able to cut it in a pretty rigorous academic environment.
Yeah.
You know, like where there is extremely dense reading and extremely detail-oriented questions, issues about that reading.
Yeah.
How do I test that? Well, law school deans have said out loud that the LSAT helps them to predict your performance in 1L. Like they've done studies of this.
Yeah.
LSAT helps me know that you're going to be good at law school. That's why I weight it so heavily if I'm a law school dean.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the rankings. That has everything to do with, well, I'd want to make sure that I'm admitting people who can actually do this work. So they're going to look at two things. They're going to look at LSAT and GPA. GPA means you were able to do it in undergrad. You know, like, you know how to play the game. You know how to show up, take notes, ask questions, do your exams, kiss ass and get better grades. That's part of the game. And they look at your GPA and they go, well, okay, so you've got the documented skills that you're able to do well in academia generally. Now, do you have the horsepower to get it done in law school specifically? Can you read really carefully? Can you read dense, arcane shit and figure out what it says? Can you be patient enough to solve these problems and know that you're answering the question correctly? That's what the LSAT tests. So the combination of undergraduate and undergraduate GPA and LSAT is still, I think, I just can't imagine what else I would do if I was a law school dean. Because I'll tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to start like reading 10,000 letters of recommendation. I'm not going to start. I'm not going to be reading your personal statement first. I don't give a shit what story you can tell. I give a shit about what you've done. And, you know, I want to look at the scoreboard. I want to look at the track record. You know, it's like baseball analytics. It's like when Billy Beane all of a sudden was like, hey, I have a shocking thing we could do. Let's look at people who kicked ass in college baseball.
Yeah.
Like, instead of all this thing about height, weight, strength, just running times, all that shit, let's look at their ERA as a college pitcher. Let's look at their batting average as a college hitter. Oh, people who have been able to get it done in the past. Okay, scoreboard. Okay, yeah. Let's use that.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing in two different ways when they look at UGPA and LSAT. They're just going, well, okay, let's look at your track record. Let's look at your statistics first. Then we'll look at all this other storytelling stuff.
Well, this leads right into soft factors. People email us all the time, right? They're like, oh, but I have this great job. I have this great connection. Okay, how is the school going to quantify that? You're in a mix of thousands of other applicants. What are they going to do? They'd be like, oh, it says Ernst & Young on here. Okay, we're going to give that 6 points and we're going to give some other thing 3 points. Like, they can't deal with that in the numbers that we're talking about. So that's why they don't. But
they do it later in the process, right?
Sure.
Because they make this first cut, like, who are the people that we're going to seriously consider? Well, we're going to consider the top half of our applicants in terms of LSAT and GPA, or the top 25% of our applicants in terms of LSAT and GPA. Let's start there, because then we have to cull it even further, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Yale admits less than 10% of all their applicants. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they got to start with LSAT and GPA, because the truth is they have to not admit like 92% of the people who apply.
Yeah. Yep.
And so let's just start with the numbers, because there's no point in seriously considering every damn applicant. Now, they might say they do, and maybe they actually do, you know, read every personal statement, but the numbers don't lie in their actual admissions statistics. They admit every single year a very high GPA and very high LSAT class. Hadari suggests that that's going to change. I don't think that's going to change. Do you really think, Ben, that all of a sudden these top schools are going to start admitting people with 160 LSATs?
No way in hell. So here's the last thing I want to say is, even if the LSAT drops in significance, right? Drops in importance. It's not. There's no way it's dropping 10 points in significance.
Yeah.
No, that would just be, that would be an earthquake of totally, that would be a seismic earthquake that drastically changes how the law school game is played.
Yeah.
And that's not happening. So
anybody who has any experience with the LSAT knows that the LSAT tells a story. It tells an important story. Like, if you really, if like 160 was the best you ever achieved on the LSAT, okay, that's means a thing. If 170 was the best LSAT you were able to achieve, it means a different thing. It just means that, like, there are certain problems that you are going to be able to solve that people with a 160 can't.
Certain problems, yeah.
Like, and legal have, problems. Like, yeah, on, you a, have different like strengths. On a law school exam.
Yeah, yeah.
Those kind of, that I'm talking about, like, relevant problems. Like, exactly, like, literally exam questions. Okay. Yeah. The 170 has documented an ability to read carefully, see through what's going on, and come up with, like, here's the relevant issue.
Yeah.
If you at a 160, you're doing that sometimes, but then there's lots of times when you're not doing it. 170s are doing it almost all the time. 175s are doing it like really almost all the time, like 99% of the time. And Harvard, Yale, Stanford know that. And even your local schools, they know that there is a big ass difference between 160 and 170.
Yep.
Thanks, Hadari. Do you have anything more to say to Hadari?
No, nope. Good luck. Keep going. Yeah,
good luck, Hadari. Absolutely take another year and just get your very best LSAT. You will thank us later, I promise. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.